You know, the thing about a city is that you're really only as healthy as the least healthy parts of the city.
More than half of the world's population currently lives in cities, and that number is rising because cities have lots to offer. But if the COVID pandemic taught us anything, it's that density comes with risk.
And so we're going to have to put much more emphasis on how do we improve health of everyone in cities. Because basically, once someone gets sick, the possibility is for everyone to get sick. So I'm David Cutler. I'm a professor of economics at Harvard in the economics department, the Kennedy School of Government, and the Chan School of Public Health.
David Cutler and his Harvard colleague Edward Glaser write about cities after the pandemic in the December issue of Finance and Development. Journalist Rhoda Metcalf sat down with David Cutler to learn more about it.
To begin with, if you could, what kind of impact did COVID have on cities and, you know, the economies of cities?
Yeah, so COVID has had a very big impact, bigger in the richer world than in the developing world. So in a lot of cities in the U.S. and other rich countries, people reduced the amount of time they spent in cities, stopped going to work, didn't hang around with other people in open spaces. So it really was a big demand reduction for being in urban areas. In the developing world, people didn't, if you will, they didn't have the luxury of doing that. That is, you still have to work. Work is in person. So there was really no noticeable change that people have found. Unlike in, say, the rich world where, you know, visits to offices were down in some places by 50%, 60%, maybe now 20 or 30% still in some areas. So still fairly big reductions in how much people are doing their normal activities in cities.
Right. And so what was the impact on the economies of the cities because of that?
It's been a fairly big impact on the economy of cities, but it's actually been sort of fairly mixed. So on the one hand, the demand for office space is down.
Sure.
So lots of employers are thinking about, do we need as much? If people are going to be in 3 days a week, maybe we should have more shared offices or shared spaces. Maybe some people want to work entirely at home, so we just don't need as much space for them. So they're thinking about reducing the geographic footprint of the office. That also, of course, affects businesses that serve the office community, you know, the sort
Absolutely.
Of corner coffee shops and the walk-by stores, you know, stores that get a lot of people who walk by and walk in. On the other hand, what COVID has done is it's increased the demand for housing, for bigger housing.
Right.
And so people have wondered, like, why is it that housing prices are still so high? And at least part of that is because people want to make sure they have space if they need to work at home. People want to make sure that their children can be at home in case their children are working at a job that's mostly remote. So it's sort of the demand for space has gone up. In some cities, one will be bigger than the other. So in some cities, there will be a big reduction in demand for space because the office work is declining a lot and there's just not that much demand for more home space. In other cities, it'll be the opposite. The businesses will still need to keep the space and the residences will want more space. So it'll be a net increase in demand.
So it's a bit of a mixed bag then.
It is going to be a very mixed bag. Some may do very well. Others, like, for example, San Francisco, are really in quite a lot of trouble. People are not going into the office. Home prices are high. If you don't have $1 million, it's hard to buy anything. And there are very few 24-year-olds who have $1 million that they can put down on a house.
Right.
So you either commute a long distance, or I'm going to be in very, very cramped quarters, which is very difficult when you're working remotely. Or you say, skip it, I'm just going to go somewhere else. So some areas could be hit very strongly by COVID. Others will benefit, you know, if people leave San Francisco, as some are doing, wherever they go could do very well. People are going to Texas or they're going to Wyoming or they're going to Colorado or other parts of California. Those areas could actually see quite an influx of people.
Do you have any sense as to whether this is happening in other wealthy areas besides the U.S., this same sort of trend?
One sees similar types of stories about London. You know, sort of all the big European capitals, I think, are that way. Over the medium term, some business space could be turned into housing.
Okay.
Or it could be turned into other business space for people to start new businesses. Like, you don't need a big bank to have 7 floors of an office building if they only need 3, and 4 of those floors can be for a startup company doing something, and 2 of those floors could ultimately be turned into housing. So this on net could be good for people in the medium term, but in the short term, it's really difficult.
Are we seeing any efforts by city leaders to, you know, incentivize companies to bring employees back into the office for the health of the city?
So far, we haven't seen that much of that. And it is very interesting. I think it's made difficult because many people are afraid of taking transportation. At least during the height of COVID, they were afraid of taking public transportation. So that made it be very difficult for people to get to work as well. I don't think they're pushing too much to be back in person, but I think they are really thinking about their tax base.
Sure.
Issues of like crime and public amenities and so on are really important because that's going to cause people to leave. You know, if there's a lot of crime and a lot of homelessness and decrepit streets and buildings and so on, that's going to make people want to leave urban areas. So it's less about pushing the businesses to come back and more about thinking about how can we run a city better when the city is itself changing a lot.
And you actually talk about this idea of the downward cycle in cities, you know, fewer workers, less money, less services, more flight. I mean, are we seeing that?
So you do see particularly the high-priced areas, the Bay Area, the Los Angeles area, New York, Boston, those areas lost some people. Like during COVID, it was kind of a temporary thing, like I'll relocate temporarily to, you know, Colorado or wherever. But and then the question is, how permanent will that be? And for some cities, it's likely to be a fairly big adjustment.
So is, you know, the whole idea of remote work, is this going to stay? I mean, is this going to be a big percentage of, do you think that we're going to see a big percentage of people's time being spent working from their home as opposed to going into the office?
It's a fascinating question, and economists have really debated that a little. So obviously, any forecasting is very difficult. On the one hand, for people who are sort of middle-aged, where we know the firm well, we've acquired a lot of human capital that's specific to the firm, we don't need to go in that much. We can kind of do our jobs remotely and so on. For younger people, people just starting out in a new job of any age, being in person seems to have a lot of benefits. So firms are less comfortable promoting people if they're remote because how do I know you can handle the tougher customers if I've never seen you handle the tougher customers? And how do I know that you'd be a good account manager if you haven't had much training from the existing account managers?
They want to see you at work.
They want to see you at work. And there's some amount of learning that comes from being at work and just sort of observing and talking with people. And firms are also worried about how are we going to have those great new ideas if nobody's bumping into each other while getting lunch?
Right.
And so many employers are really hesitant about hiring new workers and promoting people when they're largely remote.
I mean, it sort of leads to my question of whether or not cities still make sense in this era where people are not necessarily going into offices anymore.
I think they do for a couple of reasons. One is people are very social. So, you know, rural areas have much higher rates of depression than urban areas. They have higher rates of suicide than urban areas. There's a reason why people leave rural areas to get to urban areas. Urban areas are also much more productive. That is, wages are higher. Plus, there's sort of the amenities of cities. You know, if I like art or if I like parks or if I like opera or if I like whatever, you know, whatever it is. So there's a lot going for many cities. And you've sort of seen for every city that's died, like a Cleveland or Detroit in the U.S., there have been cities with near-death experiences that have come back. New York did go bankrupt in the 1970s. Boston was a terrible place. And they all came back because they all have these incredible natural resources.
Sure. And I mean, after all, life is not just about work.
Life is not just about work. And, you know, even during most of human existence, you were far more likely to be at risk of disease in a city than in a rural area. And still, we went from, you know, none of the population in cities to, you know, an enormous share of the world's population in cities, and that's still continuing.
You mentioned in your article that the very fact that urban epidemics have had a powerful impact on civilization over time. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah. One of the biggest challenges to cities has been urban epidemics, going all the way back to ancient Greece. The growth of cities is always, at first, associated with greater disease, greater death, lower living standards. So the British Industrial Revolution ultimately raised living standards, but it took about 50 years to get there. One of the great, great innovations in human existence was the general ability to reduce the risk of death from living in an urban area, in a crowded area. You know, the thing about a city is that you're really only as healthy as the least healthy parts of the city. You know, you can live in the posh environments of London, but on the street, you pass someone who lives in a slightly less wealthy area, and they pass someone who lives in a slightly less wealthy area, and so on. What cities did over time is they basically mandated safety precautions. So clean water, for example, all cities invested an enormous amount of money. A little bit over a century ago, the single biggest item in government budgets was building water and sewer supplies.
Right.
And so they would build these water supplies from aqueducts far away into the city. And then the question was, what do you do when the building owner says, no, 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 I want to keep rents cheap. I'm not going to install the water. And what basically city engineers said, either mayors or engineers said, you don't have that choice. You are going to do this.
Right.
This is a public good. If you don't do it, then people get sick. And if people get sick in your building, then they get sick elsewhere. So we mandated, we being all cities, sort of mandated, you will hook up the water, you will have sanitation, you will have garbage disposal, all those sorts of things. You won't leave dead horses lying in the streets,
right.
You know, all those sorts of things. And those have been major, major innovations. So like the last big pandemic before COVID, people think about the 1917 flu epidemic, the great flu, and people got really complacent. They said, oh, look, we've managed to avoid this situation where pandemics will kill people in cities. And for the first time ever, life expectancy got to be higher in urban areas than rural areas.
Right.
So not only were cities richer and nicer and everything, but they were also healthier too. Even though in the background, it was pretty clear, like I used to teach classes that, you know, we haven't avoided pandemics forever. Maybe we certainly reduced the risk of them by having clean water and sanitation and cleaning the air and so on, but we've definitely not gotten rid of them. And COVID was in many ways a wake-up call.
So do you think that the COVID pandemic has taught us anything that could improve cities?
I do. I think it's taught us a few things, actually. One is global, that we need to have a much better monitoring system, isolation system, vaccination system, detection system than we do now. So I think globally we have to invest a lot in that. The cost of an epidemic is so high that there's no excuse for not doing that. I think nationally, what we've learned is that many of the world's medical care systems are not set up for pandemic disease. They're set up for chronic disease, but not pandemic disease. So for example, we have very, very bad triage systems. You know, if you're mildly ill, you should stay at home and people should bring you food and stuff, but we never were set up for that.
So everybody ended up in the emerge.
Everybody ended up, you know, if you're looking for good examples, you'd go maybe to South Korea, you'd go to New Zealand, you know, but the good examples are few and far between. And then I think locally, and this gets to the city question, locally, we need to understand that we're only as healthy as the least healthy people. And so just like a century ago, rich people cared if poor people had water supplies, clean water going into and coming, you know, and sewage coming out of their buildings. We all need to care what is life expectancy like and what are living conditions like in the poorest areas of cities.
Right.
And I may care because I care about those people, but even if I don't, even if I'm Scrooge and all I care about is myself and my family, I care about them for that reason as well. And so we're going to have to put much more emphasis on how do we improve health of everyone in cities, because basically once someone gets sick, the possibility is for everyone to get sick.
Okay, David Cutler, it's a sobering conversation, but I thank you so much for participating in the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Rhoda Metcalf speaking with David Cutler, professor of economics at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government and the Chan School of Public Health. Look for his article about cities after the pandemic in the December edition of Finance and Development magazine. Check it out at imf.org/FND. And look for other IMF podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. I'm Bruce Edwards.
And I'm Rhoda Metcalf. Thanks for listening.